Thus stand firm against any and all arbitrary authority that threatens the personal sovereignty of one or all. That which will not bend must break, and that which can be destroyed by truth should never be spared its demise. It is done. Hail Satan.
It is time for another episode of Satanic Study Hall. What is up, everybody?
Hey!
Yo!
Hey!
How you doing?
I'm doing just great.
How you doing?
I'm fucking excited to be back in class. Al, you sound relaxed. Are you comfy there over there in your chair?
I got shorts on. I took the pants off. I got shorts on. I'm in my happy place.
I got nothing on.
Turn your camera off, Dennis.
I got a shirt on at least, but yeah, I got nothing underneath.
Yes,
and this is why we do a podcast and not like a live stream.
Yes, maybe someday.
Speaking of the classroom, guys, I just found out Crocs are now making Heelys as well, so I will be zooming around the classroom.
Heelys are fucking dangerous.
They're back.
Yeah, but they're,
what do you think? Crocs are hitting at an all time low.
With fucking wheels, dude. Crocs with fucking wheels.
I gotta start selling some Heely insurance to people. Some Heely insurance policy.
They need to do a collaboration with LA Lights.
How many generations like want their shit back? Like the 90s called, they want their shit back. It's like you got wheelies with Crocs.
Janko came back out.
See, I don't know. I rock Jankos all the time. I don't think I can. I don't even think at this point I can get down with Jankos. It's like they're silly. I just
want that patch on my ass.
I can get down with some UFO, the parachute pants. Oh, like, I love the fucking UFOs. I was a raver kid.
Dude, I had neon blue UFOs. I fucking loved them.
Little rainbow fucking gathering and hippie. Man, I was in everything, as long as it involved the weed. All right. Well, anyways, welcome back, everybody. Class is in session. This is Satanic Study Hall. We'll tell you who we are or what Satanic Study Hall is in just a second. But first, who we are. My name is Bill. I am a member of the Satanic Temple. But yeah, that's me. And I am joined by a couple of my favorite degenerates here. Who wants to take the microphone?
Hey, my name is Cancel Dennis Morningstar. Hashtag Cancel Dennis Morningstar. I'm a member of the Satanic Temple, and yeah, that's about it.
Hi, I am Veronica. Since the Morning Star has been canceled, I am Veronica Evening Star. I am the Evening Star. Oh. In addition to the valedictorian, sometimes the smartest person in the room, and I am heavily aligned with the seven tenets of the Satanic Temple.
I am Father Al. Bless you, my children. I am also a member of the Satanic Temple, and I am the founder of the Cancel Dennis Morningstar movement.
Fuck.
Sorry, pal. You opened that door. I walked right through it.
It's all right. You have it.
I'm assuming that hashtag will be trending on our Discord and maybe even on Twitter someday. You never know.
Extremely soon.
Keep your fingers crossed. Cross your fingers, your toes, your dick, you know, do whatever you gotta do.
Man, I love this cancel culture shit.
But yeah, so Johnny will be joining us on the next episode, hopefully with a music review. But speaking of music reviews, we will tease a musical journey. It has been recorded, it has been edited, it is ready to be released, and that was Johnny's first solo episode from planning and booking and editing and hosting and producing. Me and Dennis joined him on that musical journey. And it was with John Russin III, who is in a band, goth industrial band out of the Philadelphia area. And that band is called Carfax Abbey. And I believe they were really dominant in the scene, probably a good 10, 12 years. John was telling us how he's been a musician for over 40 years. And he really took us on a really awesome musical journey. Now, you've heard our personal journeys with some of our, you know, our fans and supporters that we've done. But the Musical Journey series, I think this is the first of many. So props to Johnny. Shout out to my man, Sloth. Hey, you guys.
Yes.
Yes. Bust out the Rocky Road ice cream. You deserve it, buddy.
Oh, that goofy looking motherfucker.
We love you, Johnny. Yes. So I said we were going to tell you who we were. So we are Satanic Study Hall. We're a podcast who talks about Satanism. The things heathens do, the things heathens like, the places heathens go.
Still waiting on the places heathens go.
Oh, that's coming. Don't you worry about that. That's booked. We're cutting class soon. We are cutting class and taking the microphones with us.
You can't just keep your voice down. He's going to hear.
Our listeners are going to hear about the places that heathens go because we're going to fucking go there.
Where are we going?
We'll have to talk about that. We're going to have a group huddle after class somewhere, maybe in the art room.
Father Al's confessional will be open to hear all of your sins after we get back.
You're gonna need to move that makeshift confessional booth you built out off school property soon because it's garnishing some crazy attention. We try to be fun, entertaining, and we're in study hall. Principal Pan cuts in every now and then, makes his announcements. The Devil's Dictionary is making its triumphant return if it hasn't already. Maybe even with some new theme music. I don't know. Dipping deep into the 1930 fucking church organ folder I have on my computer. Yeah, so that's pretty much it. So one thing we like to do on Satanic Study Hall before we get down to business, whether it's plugs or just, you know, the topic at hand, is kind of feel each other out a little bit. So one thing I like to ask the crew, I'll start with you, Father Al. How are you now?
You know, life continues to make me it's Joker, it's court jester, as you'll speak. About 4 weeks ago, I busted my hand walking up the steps. Yeah, really exciting story there. So my typing is a little infringed at the moment. No, that's about it. Glad to be back here in study hall. Glad to be working on some exciting projects. A lot of craziness, but a lot of good on the horizon. So I'm feeling pretty damn good, if you ask me. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Alan. Dennis Morningstar, or cancel Dennis Morningstar. How are you now?
I'm doing all right. Other than you see my face, it's the fucking size of New York City right now. Fucking this tooth is so fucking infected. It hurts so bad. They wouldn't even give me antibiotics last week. And thankfully it's getting pulled tomorrow, but yeah, I'm just sitting here in a lot of fucking pain. Can't smoke weed until after the surgery, which I'm... Dude, I'm taking it with me there.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. That was one of the things. Like, I stopped smoking. I was smoking cigarettes at the time when I had my teeth taken out. That was the thing that really kind of affected me the most. And I wanted to smoke weed. And I was like, fuck, I tried eating edibles. And that's a whole different high. You take the THC pills, that's a whole different high. No, I can completely resonate with that.
Yeah, no, that shit doesn't affect me. I need either flour or wax. But yeah, no. So I got half of my face is the size of New York City. The other half looks like an anorexic asshole self that I am. But yeah, no, I'm doing good this week. Thanks for asking. Veronica?
How are you now, Veronica?
You know, I'm doing good adjusting to this recent major life transition. But it was, you know, it was more of a blessing. I can't complain about it. It's a lot of work. It's a big adjustment, but it's really nice. I had a little bit of a career change, all for the better. Yeah, feeling like a wealthy ass bitch right now, actually. But it's I don't know.
Veronica is snapping necks and cashing checks. Boats and hoes.
All I want to do.
All that wob. Wealthy ass bitch.
Making money moves.
Definitely. But there are, I mean, maybe I'll talk about this a little bit later, the more I adjust to it. There's a lot of Catholic coworkers I have now. And of course, you know, I don't know.
I'm so sorry. You should quit tomorrow.
But it's not that bad. They're really, really good people at the end of the day. I am being very conscientious about what I say. I'm giving them a censored version of things. I mean, I think I've even said the word alternative religion in the past week, which sounds really weird to me. But I do really like these women as people and, you know, just the stuff they're teaching me. They're so welcoming and really, really knowledgeable. So I might talk a little bit down the line with how the evolution of, you know, being a Satanist at work goes. But, you know, I still feel like it's a little bit new. So good, though. I'm doing good.
You just wait till Christmas time when you get asked to be in the fucking manger. Yeah, then you can, you know what? I was going to say, yeah, just keep that whole reveal in your back pocket for right around the fucking holidays. Really make some impact. Really make some impact. So I guess
I'm enjoying making a lot of money, though, Bill. So, I mean, we'll see about that.
You have some interesting options at the company Halloween party now.
I always had some interesting options.
I wonder who your secret Satan is going to be.
Oh, there's a dollar limit on that one. You're gonna be like Michael Scott in The Office, like when he bought Ryan the fucking iPod and the limit was fucking 20. Veronica's just gonna flex and just buy someone like a fucking laptop.
I'm gonna have a giant Baphomet statue shipped to their house.
There you go, fully fucking casted in bronze. All right, so I guess it's my turn. How am I? I'm doing all right. That's honestly, I can honestly say I'm doing all right. Been more focused on things lately, and I don't know, work sucks. Really kind of hoping for a career change similar to Veronica. Excited to be on back to a regular schedule recording. I think this is good. This is going to be fun. Discord is growing. I've grown to love Discord. I do not miss Facebook. I randomly hit the F on my phone because I still have it installed so I can use Messenger. And I see I have 99 plus notifications and it makes me fucking laugh is I'm not going to read them. So, and they're just going to stay there and 99 plus, whatever. I can still use Messenger. If people want to get in touch with me bad enough, they can send me a message or fucking call me. Shit. Yeah, fuck Facebook. And I'm hoping I did download my profile. I'm going to do it again because I can't remember when I named it and what folder I saved it in. But apparently you can download your entire account, like your entire account history, all your posts, all your photos and videos and shares and all of that. And I tried to do mine and it was like 20 gigs or some shit. It's a lot of data. It's a lot of fucking data. And that's scary as shit. I might make a troll account on this new MySpace site that I hear. What's the name of it? Dennis, you know the name of the new.
I have no interest.
Space in Hay.
It's either Space Hay or Hay Space. It's one of the two, but I fucking signed up for that shit.
Hey Space?
It's either Hey Space or Space Hey. But dude, it's fucking MySpace 2.0. I fucking love it.
Yeah, it's another Office reference. I thought you said Hey Place, and that was the fucking big ass maze that Dwight built. Hey. Is it a place for hay? But yeah, so I might check that out. But outside of that, I'm doing good. Kids' grades are coming up on the whole virtual learning tip, so that's kind of neat. Good things are happening, or no, Baphomet things are happening in Philadelphia, which is really fucking awesome. And no, just really, like I think I said this before, I don't know if I said it in the main episode, but I'm on a whole, you know, I was at first introduced to the whole Hail Thyself concept in my introduction to Satanism, but I think I'm really starting to take it seriously now, as well as always being mindful of the balance. Like the whole left-hand path thing, like the whole left-hand path and journey as a Satanist, requires a lot of personal responsibility. So it's not like just cause you can follow the fucking left-hand path or you're hailing thyself every day. You can just do whatever the fuck you want without repercussion. You know, so this journey comes with a lot of personal responsibility and accountability, but at the same time, it is so fucking liberating. And I think that, you know, you all can speak to that as well. So yeah, that's it. So I think we're all doing pretty good and that's good to hear. Anybody else got anything before we progress?
All I got to say is fuck the Catholic Church for basically saying in yet another display of their infinite wisdom that they can't bless same-sex unions because they the Pope can't bless sin. I think fuck you is the appropriate response. I mean, unless someone's got something better.
See, this is what fucking drives me fucking wild. I'm tapping my head and I'm frustrated. wasn't there just some social media post a month ago, 2 months ago, maybe even like weeks ago where like they endorsed it to a point?
Who
I don't care. But I'm just curious. Didn't they just do it?
Seek out a blessing from them anyway. Like, I'm sorry. I guess if you're gay and you're Catholic, I mean, live your life. But I don't know what anybody expects. You know, like, I don't need anybody to bless my marriage to make it valid. You know, I don't know. That's just my opinion. Sorry.
Take it a step further and just say, you know, women in Christianity, period. Like, it's the same fucking concept. Like, it's knowingly being a part of something that suppresses and chokes the fuck out of you. I don't know. That's a whole nother episode.
Something that's also, like, not real, just as a baseline. Just there.
The Santa Jesus God is not real. Yes, we need to remember that. So why are we here today? What the fuck are we talking about? We haven't even teased it yet. That's how good we are at these introductions. We just press record and it just fucking happens. We are here to talk about this douche nozzle, this ultimate fucking douche nozzle, Joshua Milton Blahi, who is better known as General Butt Naked. Yes, that's General Butt Naked. In my research, in letting people know that we were recording this episode, it's funny because it's been like a complete 50-50 split. And I try to keep it just asking, you know, people within our little satanic community on our Discord or whatever, people either have never heard of him or people, no, I don't know who the fuck you're talking about, or holy shit, fuck that guy. But there's a lot to the fuck that guy journey and story, which is why when Al brought this up as a possible episode topic, we jumped right in. We wanted to record this for months. It just, you know, has been gotten pushed off with all the other opportunities of VHQ that have popped up and whatever. But this is going to be a pretty fun episode. And it's going to be a fucking sickening episode at the same time. Joshua Blahi, or General Butt Naked, has a story beyond like no other you've probably ever heard. So if this is your first exposure to General Butt Naked, grab something to drink, a snack, sit down and fucking and kick back and listen. Yes, remove the children. And
no,
you know,
not as the snack.
You should still probably remove the children from the room when it comes to, you know, whenever you listen to us, it's probably a good idea. But I'm going to hand it off to Al. This is, you know, Al's, you know, journey here as far as bringing it to the table. And let's get going. What you got?
So when you think of the most evil people in history, you probably think of people like Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, Saddam Hussein, and others. These people generally gain notoriety for not only their high positions as government leaders and military officials, but also the staggering number of those they're responsible for killing, torturing, and wounding. In many cases, these individuals never directly killed any, or not nearly as many, as the deaths that they are held responsible for. These monsters were able to drive others to commit these horrible acts due to a shared ideology, a cult of personality, or out of fear for their own lives and the lives of their families if they didn't comply. Today, we're going to look at someone that I personally consider to be one of the most evil people in history. Someone who is responsible for at least 20,000 deaths, both directly and indirectly. Someone who took part in human sacrifices and cannibalism, killing young children and teenage boys and eating their hearts and drinking their blood before battle in the name of Satan. Someone who claimed to have regular conversations with Satan and who had magical powers that made him invincible. This, my fellow degenerates, is Joshua Milton Blahi, better known as General Butt Naked, or as Veronica the Valedictorian likes to call him, Josh. Yes, you heard that right. General Butt Naked. A commander of forces during the First Liberian Civil War, Blahi earned this title by going into battle naked, wearing nothing but sneakers and carrying his rifle. His mercenary unit, aptly named the Butt Naked Brigade.
The Butt Naked Brigade. Sorry, I know you said not to interrupt you, but I had to. The Butt Naked Brigade.
Yeah. Okay. They would join him in battle, often naked themselves or dressed in women's clothing. Now, we're going to dive into the life and history of General Butt Naked, and be prepared. This story takes a 180 and has an ending so shocking that none of us here in the study hall saw it coming. Let's start out by going back in time a little bit, seeing how this shit show got started, and talk a little bit about the Liberian Civil War and how it created General Butt Naked. Bill, you want to fill us in on that?
Yeah, I mean, I can cover a little bit of it. Sure. I mean, did some research. And I mean, this guy, not only is he is disgusting, but he's also very intriguing, as I mentioned before. So one thing I wanted to do for myself, and I'll share with everybody here, is to kind of paint the picture and learn a little bit about why was there a fucking warlord running through the street naked with children naked or in dresses, butchering people and shooting people and, you know, by the hundreds, you know, what created this situation. And so, you know, did some research, started out about Liberia, you know, but on its own. And one of the first flags that I saw, you know, things that I saw was, you know, Liberia is like the fourth poorest country in the world. Like their slums are the worst slums on the planet. As far as, you know, civilian slums, there's places in here that are so stricken even currently from the civil war that started in 89 that, you know, their kids are playing in their own refuse. There's no toilets. There's no, you know, there's, you know, they're picking their food and everything from somebody else's garbage. It's a complete and utter disaster. And, you know, some of my research also said that there's, you know, there's improvement happening, but definitely not at the rate that it needs to be. But as far as Liberia, you know, Liberia is located in Western Africa. It's, you know, borders Sierra Leone, Guinea, and the Ivory Coast. The Monrovia is the capital of Liberia, where a lot of shit went down. And that was named for U.S. President James Monroe. Liberia and the United States, you know, in the beginning, or in my research, were pretty tight-knit from a military standpoint, especially pre-Gulf War. What happened with the whole Gulf War thing is, you know, just to kind of paint a picture, is Liberia was supposed to, you know, Liberian forces were supposed to deploy, and they didn't. And that kind of really put strain on their relations. It fucked up, you know, their relationship to the United Nations. But yeah, so, I mean, up until then, there were, you know, they were United States and Liberia, you know, were definitely working together on a lot of fronts, not the right fronts, definitely not the right fronts. They were more concerned about overthrowing political regimes and helping the fucking people. As far as that, English is the official language in Liberia. There are about 20 ethnic languages in Liberia, many of them which actually have no written form. 80% of Liberia's population lives below the poverty line. And this is one of the saddest things, is life expectancy for men and women is just over 40 years old. That's fucked. And as far back as 2003, I mean, and when a lot of this stuff was, you know, Butt Naked was still going fucking nuts in 2003, I believe, the per capita annual income was equatable to $130 US. It's completely poverty stricken and broken. Now, approximately 450,000 Liberians, mostly affluent and educated, live in the United States. And if you haven't seen the Liberian flag, and it's one of the first things that I noticed, and, you know, there's a Vice documentary about General Butt Naked that you can look up and watch. I believe it's on YouTube. Full of fucking commercials, but it's worth it. The Liberian flag is actually designed and modeled after the U.S. flag. It has red and white stripes, just like ours, but in the upper corner, it's just... What's that?
One star, right?
Yep, just one star, just one white five-pointed star on a blue square. So that kind of, you know, paints a picture a little bit of it. And again, as we always say in study hall, you know, we encourage you to do your own research and dive in further. But politics in Liberia have always, you know, been fucked. Things got real heavy in the early 80s. I didn't do too much research into the government part pieces of things, but I do know that General Butt Naked worked under Samuel K. Doe's regime, or who eventually became presidency. But basically, in a coup on April 12th in 80, Doe, and who was a semi-literate indigenous Liberian from the Kron, I think it's called, the Kron ethnic group, seized power. And President Tolbert, Colbert, President Tolbert was killed in his fucking bed. And after that, 13 of his aides were all publicly executed for everybody to see in the fucking streets. So Doe came in with a fury, and really it got worse from there. Not only did that happen, but Doe then suspended the Liberian Constitution. He formed an authoritarian regime called the People's Redemption Council. And the Krons who followed Doe, they amassed a political and military power, spawning tension with pretty much every other ethnic group around them. Now, as I said, there were good relations leading up until the Gulf War time. He was still able to, you know, manifest good relationships with the United States and got a shit ton of fucking military and economic aid. Like, I'm talking a shit ton, to the point where, like, and many, many thousands of these weapons just disappeared and went to the streets. I'm sure Butt Naked Brigade got their fucking hands on these United States supplied weapon at some point. It was sloppy as shit. So that continued, and then things got real in 89. Charles Taylor, a former Doe ally, he led the National Patriotic Front of Liberia, and this is in a revolt against Doe. This was, you know, the NPFL, or the National Patriotic Front, easily found supporters among all the non-Kron Liberians and was also backed by the government of the neighboring Ivory Coast. So shit was getting real. People were clashing, and hence we now have a civil war. Doe's regime ended in 1990, and his death by torture was also filmed and distributed amongst the community and pretty much the entire country.
Just as a side, I saw that video. I mean, like all of them are, it's hard to watch, but yeah, it's a little bit, you know, it already starts off pretty fucking bloody and gorely, where just the usurper, I guess, is then usurped by another usurper, and the torture is like purposely filmed and distributed to basically not to say, hey, you know, justice is done, but to essentially scare the rest of the population into what's coming for them too.
And to unite the people that are on their side as propaganda.
Oh yeah. And that shit happened back and forth. I mean, there were pop-up militant groups that garnished a little bit of support here and there that quickly fizzled out. But right before Doe was, you know, killed, the civil war had already broke out. And then all sorts of rebel factions were clashing. And then in 1990, the Economic Community of West African States, they were like, yo, we need to help. They sent in a bunch of peacekeeping forces, that were also backed by Sierra Leone, Nigeria, and Guinea. And even though, they agreed to disarm in 1991, they still managed to attack the West African peacekeepers. So like, and on all fronts, it was blowing up. And this continued and continued and continued, you know, throughout the 90s, as, I guess, Butt Naked, you know, killed his fucking ridiculous tally of 20,000 plus, as he likes to say. So, I mean, I can get further into the politics and everything, but just to kind of paint a picture, you know, I just kind of took everybody through the 90s, but there's a little bit of a timeline, as you'll hear. I just have to kind of find it here. So as we got into 1989, we talked about the Economic Community of West African States. They sent their peacekeepers in, didn't fucking work. In 97, after several years of all the chaos, and the stop and go fighting and the treaties and the ceasefires and everything, Charles Taylor, he formed an uprising against the government 8 years prior, but he won a presidential election. Now, Charles Taylor, his supporters were fucking nuts. But he won the presidential election in 97. And then this was also backed by, you know, international election observers who declares that the elections were free and fair. I call bullshit.
Really?
Not on that committee, though. It's too bad. Now, 2 years later, shit starts popping off on the border again. Ghana and Nigeria accused Liberia of supporting revolutionary United Fronts and rebels in Sierra Leone. And then Britain and the U.S. get involved and threaten to suspend all their aid. And Liberia freaks the fuck out. So they calm down. And then in 2000, you know, stability's kind of, you know, elusive. It's there, but it's not. The government then again reports more attacks by rebels who identified themselves as Liberians United for Reconciliation and Democracy, or LURD, like turd, but LURD. So yeah, I mean, this is continuing here into the early 2000s. UN security councils are getting involved. And then, you know, in 2002, more than 50,000 Liberians and Sierra Leonean people fled in fighting. Like, they left, they bounced, it was done. And then Taylor had to declare a state of emergency in 2002. So definitely wanted to at least lead up and paint a little bit of a picture as to why this motherfucker, General Butt Naked, you know, was doing what he was doing. Not why he was doing what he was doing, because he'll tell you 18 different things, but what led to it.
For the better half of a decade to, you know, continue to do it without necessarily being caught. And, you know, we'll find out. Even now, hasn't been prosecuted. But yeah, it was like a decade of straight anarchy that just increased and increased.
To kind of sum it up in terms of like the scope of it, it's from what I read in the Amazon documentary about this. The Liberian Civil War ended in 2003, 14 years after it began. And it says an estimated 250,000 people were killed. So, yeah, it got me to stop and thinking that like almost 10% of the deaths in the entire war are attributable to General Butt Naked, which is kind of creepy if you think about it.
And I, you know, when I first heard the figure 20,000, I was like, yeah, right. Come on, give me a fucking break. 20,000, you're claiming. But when you do your research and you know, these people travel through the villages and, you know, they tell the stories and you could see like almost the fear. I mean, there's people that I've seen interviewed on camera, you know, where their entire family was fucking butchered by the Butt Naked Brigade and some of them eaten.
It's not only the fact that, you know, it was not just him, but it was the people under him that he ordered to kill others. I mean, they would apparently just go into an area and just rape and murder just people at will.
And for other reasons, as we'll find out. And I will say, just to be, you know, a little bit doubtful, and like, I want to preface this by saying I'm a literal child's rights fanatic. So, I mean, I definitely would be the first person to kind of like raise my fist in the air and be like, he's a murderer of 20,000 people, mostly children, you know, children most affected, of course. There are some tall tales that not just him, but a lot of these warlords to kind of up their reputation and up their ventures and what we're going to get into, but what they're now doing and what they're capable of, even with the backing that they still have currently. There is a chance that he's vamping up those numbers a little, but the fact that the village, I mean, there's so many villagers who come forth and say the same thing. It seems like he did leave, or a lot of people did manage to survive this, or at least to see their families get tortured, raped, murdered, and cannibalized by him. It doesn't seem in this particular case like he's exaggerating his death count that much. Me and Dennis were going to get in a little bit to Albert Fish. It's definitely, it's not too comparable. Like, specifically with cannibals, there's something about them where it seems like when they talk about their cannibalism and their crimes, they're really, really eager to up their death count significantly. And nothing was documented in Liberia, but all I am saying is that, you know, when you see that number and you're like, there's no possible way, there are thousands of villagers that come forth, if not hundreds, you know, hundreds, if not thousands that come forth and tell the same story.
No, absolutely. And before we dive in and learn more about exactly, you know, who and what, you know, Josh Blahi did, I don't even like calling him by his real fucking name. Why do I do that? General Butt Naked. But I feel like both give him redemption in some weird fucked up way. I mean, I can call him Dickhead, but like, and then I could be talking about Dennis or Johnny or Al and confuse listeners.
You dropped Dickhead in his name.
But no, I'll call him General Butt Naked. But so he had a crazy name, right? He was General Butt Naked. He fought in the streets naked, and we'll tell you why and all the crazy shit. But there were crazy generals when, I mean, these were people that he fought against or with. There was General Chuck Norris, General One Foot Devil, General Mosquito. And do you know who General Mosquito's nemesis was?
General Mosquito Spray.
Yes, it's no fucking joke. Like General Mosquito Spray. There was General Rambo. There was General Bin Laden that we learned about in the Vice special when we watched. There were a couple General Bin Ladens actually, because they would take these names that they thought in like incited terror or fear into people. And like when we talk about it now, we laugh about it, but it's fucked because this is a tactic, and this is a tactic that worked to suppress and fucking, you know, put forth fear and destroy cultures and societies and families. And it was fucked. And this shit, this weird mind control fuckery, you know, it worked. And while we can snicker about it because it is kind of fucked up and funny, I also want to make sure that the proper light is shined on the fact that these were fucked up people who were doing some fucked up things. But on that note too, in that environment, which after watching and researching is an environment I never want to personally relate to ever. It's a completely different world. It is not anything of what we know over here. But yeah, I guess it's time to learn a little bit more about Josh, huh?
Yeah, they say war is hell, and that is true. I mean, the one thing that always got me was that, you know, for whatever reasons, he says that he went into battle naked. I mean, there definitely is a psychological impact. I mean, you know, you see someone running at you with a gun, I mean, you're going to be afraid. You're going to run. You see someone running at you naked, wearing nothing but shoes, you're going to think, this motherfucker is out of his mind. This person is capable of anything. Like, I am going to be freaked the fuck out, like 100 times worse.
If I saw someone running naked at me in nothing but shoes, I'd be the fucking happiest and horniest motherfucker on the planet.
Right. That is
you had they'd be running, I'd be fucking ripping shit off already.
Then it is actually, just to point out again, not very equivocal, but I will say that there are actually I'm pretty sure that this is like a more common thing than people realize. There are muggers. I can even tell you, you know, like four of my friends who I've heard this from, who either lived in New York or went to New York for work and traveled a lot. People would, muggers specifically, they would make sure they were naked under a long coat, like a trench coat or just something long. And they would have a gun on them, and they would flash you. Like, they would pick somebody out to mug, they would flash them. And then that person is so startled by the fact that they are naked, you know, let alone the fact that they're demanding money and have a gun or a fake gun or something that looks like a weapon. It actually makes people more likely to freeze and panic and not do anything or just surrender because they don't know what you're capable of. Like, that nakedness actually does add like a shock terror factor that makes people submit to you
more. No, they do that in New York City. I literally heard about that like on the news on a regular basis. Like, people would either do it in tandem, or one motherfucker would just sit there, then flash you, and your attention would freeze. And whether you're staring at his junk or whatever, you're just in complete shock. Like, then they'll snatch your fucking bag or your purse or whatever the hell's in your hand and just bolt. And are you really going to chase a naked man down the street and wrestle him?
Yeah. So, I mean, and that even sounds kind of funny and a little bit absurdist, but it's like, it's used as a terror tactic, like on top of all these other like weapons of war. General Butt Naked used nakedness as a weapon of war.
He was also covered in blood and had like children who were either naked or dressed in bridal clothing. Yeah. And that in itself is like the cover of some fucked up comic book.
They would have pocketbooks.
Beautiful comic book. I don't even know what to say now.
I mean,
I would love to be covered in blood. I don't want a bride child next to me, but I mean,
Dennis, here's your opportunity. Can you draw? The comic writes itself. You know it's going to be, you call it the Butt Naked Brigade.
This is happening. The Butt Naked Brigade. Let's do this shit.
like the fucking Liberian Avengers.
Bill, stop encouraging him.
Liberian Avengers. Oh my God. Okay. So speaking, let's get in a little bit. He did,
what's that quote? Let's get into the downright evil stuff.
Yeah, exactly. So he used children. There was a majority of his army, I think, was child soldiers. He sought them out specifically because they were children, and he claimed that, what did he say? They focus more. He like found that children weren't thinking about their futures, or at least they didn't think in the context of any kind of future. So that when he told them something, when he told them to kill, that's all they were.
And one of the interviews that I saw, they referred to them like, and just compared them to dogs. They were trainable. That's when you want them. That's when they're moldable. That's when they'll do anything.
He also, going back to kind of these terror tactics, and specifically with, the pseudonyms as cannibal generals that they would use, he did use like Hollywood and particularly American media to further his style of brainwashing, if that makes sense. He would take these kids and show them a really violent action movie, like straight out of Hollywood, and say, oh, do you see this man? He died in this movie. And then he would show them another movie where that same actor is alive in the movie and saying, basically, you know, if you die in my war, if you die fighting for me, it's okay, because, you know, life is a movie and you'll live, you know, you'll live to fight another day. Even if you do die, you see these men in these movies, they die bloodily all the time, and then they're a lot. You see them alive here. It was very, I don't think manipulative is a word that covers it completely. It's sick. And he did, like, he used that specifically. So that's also, you know, a little bit absurdist, but and kind of hilarious in an absurd way, but also just sick.
Attention staff and students, the Satanic Study Hall podcast is not affiliated with any other podcast or organization. None. Zero. The views and opinions expressed on the podcast are ours and ours alone. Hail Satan.
Now, Veronica, I wanted to ask you a question, because you were talking about how he got, you know, children to run his army and things like that. And, you know, he's running modern day. Now, do you remember back in 2012 when they were doing that whole Kony 2012 thing and the invisible children? Was it something similar to that? Because, you know, Kony would go into villages and take their kids to run, you know, to join his army and things like that. Because I thought it was more towards the fact that they are easily manipulated, and, you know, you can raise them a certain way. You can, you know. Is it anything that sort?
It definitely is. I mean, of course, I don't think it's just Africa. It's any kind of war-torn third world country, frankly. I mean, they enslave.
Fuck, China does it. I mean, shit. Yeah. China's done it for thousands of years.
I mean, there's also other reasons behind it too. I mean, you could tell a child, okay, well, join us or you'll kill your family. Or, you know, I mean, join us and you get a gun and you get power and you get a sense of community and a purpose that they may not have otherwise, or they could consider it like safety. Like, if I join this troop, then even though I'm going into battle, you know, I'll have food. I'll have people looking out for me. So I mean, I could just see a number of reasons where you could use all those factors to manipulate, you know, children into joining this cult or this lifestyle or this army or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, it's just specifically in his case, you know, making blood and gore his purposeful staple, but also saying to a child, you know, taking advantage of a child's perception, which is just like, you know, you just saw this man die on screen and he's alive here. So therefore, if, you know, you get ripped to shreds by bullets and chopped to death or something by the opposition, you know, you'll be alive too, kid. Because I remember, I don't know if you guys do, but I remember having those thoughts too when I was really little, and my parents were horrible. So I saw whatever was on TV whenever it wasn't, you know, there was no discrimination. But I would see people die on TV really horribly. And I did. There was a period of my youth where I thought that actor was dead. Like, okay, you just gave your life for a movie, basically. I remember until somebody explained it to me.
I completely understand what you're saying. Like, I thought the same thing.
He did this to thousands of kids. He, you know, tricked into thinking that, you know, you will survive death because it happens in a really violent, gory film. And also, this is all okay because you see this happening in a movie. So, like, of course it's okay. It made it that much more acceptable. I mean, it's not really something even if these kids get out of this situation alive, it's something they're never, ever, ever going to be able to psychologically recover from. They're never going to look at their own lives the same way again. They're not going to look at the lives of other people the same way again.
I mean, that's fucked. It's like he could, out of nowhere, he could be like, all right, look, there's Detective John Kimball. He's like, who is your daddy and what does he do? And be like, look, he got shot. He's dead. And then he puts in the fucking Terminator. He's like, look, if you die, you can turn into a robot. And it's these fucking, it's not a tumor. These kids would believe it. And that is so fucking crazy. Sorry to inject a little bit of fucking dark humor into it, but
it's
crazy. Can someone take us through? Because I think this is important. I know we know. But how did Joshua Blahi, the intrigued fucking revolutionary, become General Butt Naked? Can someone take us through that transition when he was visited by somebody?
Sure, let me jump in on that. He was first made high priest from the tribe he was in, and he was eventually upgraded all the way to spiritual advisor of the president, Samuel Doe. And, you know, from there, he actually was visited by a god named Niambe Awe. And he was told to sacrifice children. And that's where that all started. And from there, he started to believe that Niambe Awe was the devil himself. And from there, it kind of just kept going on a little more and more. And I don't know. Anybody else have?
I mean, something the devil that, definitely apparently went down to Liberia. Like, what the?
Like, I think what, it was for 14 years.
Huge banjo.
That's right.
The devil went down to Liberia.
Devil went down to Liberia. He was a good friend of mine.
He was looking for a job.
He was looking. He's looking for. Oh no! I go, dude. We could totally do a remix around fucking General Butt Naked of that song,
dude. Oh man, this is fucking great.
Yeah, that's a Patreon episode right there.
All right, so who's writing the lyrics?
Oh, that's, we still haven't finished. We still haven't finished our satanic sea shanty yet. So I still have to do that. We got like three verses though, and all we need is like one more, I think, and it's done. But yeah, so back to business.
Yes, I mean, you know, he would, you know, claim that, you know, he claimed that his nakedness was a source of protection from bullets. I mean, that's why he did it from what he claims. But getting back to, you know, at some point, you know, Satan started, or the devil started visiting him on a regular basis. And, you know, it was a period of something like 14 years that he took part in these monthly human sacrifices, which mostly involved, you know, killing an innocent kid and taking it out the heart and you know, splitting it up for the troops to eat before battle. And these were, you know, part of his, you know, ways that he got his magical powers that made him invisible. I remember in the documentary, you know, someone even commented that, like, I went in and they were shooting bullets and no bullets hit him. And so, I mean, that was kind of it. I mean, apparently, you know, Satan told him do this, and how he did it was, you know, pretty horrible.
And imagine, not to interrupt, but imagine that visual, y'all. Imagine that visual as a villager or someone that lives there or a child. Just like we talked about General Butt Naked and his fucking Butt Naked Brigade coming down the streets, taking shit over. But imagine that visual when bullets are flying and he's walking, almost walking through them. Yeah, he's just not getting fucking hit. But like, and then to take that back to this weird little fucking, you know, brigade that he's got and to use that to fuel it even more for the next battle. Like, that's pretty fucking intense.
Yeah. I mean, let me take that one step further and say, you know, how fucked up is it to be part of the Butt Naked Battalion and actually get used to doing that shit to the point at which it doesn't affect you emotionally anymore? That's something to think about. I mean, you know, I mean, from what
they couldn't process emotions. Those kids were smoking heroin and smoking coke. I mean, straight up tar. Like,
have you ever smoked coke?
No,
and that's just fucking crazy.
But I imagine, but then these fucking time in their life. these 11, 12, 13, 14, sometimes younger, are literally and are doing fucking heroin and coke like in between, like, or to ramp up for battle, or doing or smoking coke to offset the tar. Like, it's nuts.
But even if they did sober up and think I did that, I mean, how, you know, maybe eventually got normal, but then they were traumatized later. I mean, you know, I mean, from what I read that, you know, what he would do is, you know, Josh would you know, it says he would, you know, go into the water near where they were playing, dive under, break one of their necks. Sometimes he would just slaughter them. Like, it was just a complete depravity towards human life at that point. I mean, you know, apparently he said, you know, that they killed hundreds of people, so many he lost count, which is going back to what we were earlier saying. I mean, you know, that 20,000 number was just probably just an estimate. It could have been more. It could have been less. I don't think it was as much exaggeration.
Well, no, you
as
notice there's one thing that he says, you know, when you ask him about how many people he killed. And he always uses the 20,000 mark, but he always says no less than 20,000.
Oh, shit.
Every single interview that I've ever seen him mention the number, he always says no less than 20,000.
Taking it back to all these horrible ways he sacrificed people and for the god slash the devil that, you know, we found out he did this for. This man literally partook in satanic ritual abuse.
Oh, shit.
I mean, everything, you know, that we as Satanists, we work really, really hard, at least, you know, it's a little bit two states focused, in my opinion, but at least the cases in the States and in Europe, the cases that we kind of work to really, really look into and find the truth behind them and dismantle when they are false because of how badly they hurt innocent people, not just people being prosecuted for, you know, a false crime, but also, just the victims afterwards, the victims' families, like all these cases we really delve into. And, you know, it all becomes just really fantastical at the end of the day, you know, a completely absurd and made up story. This wasn't a made up story. This man did this. I think it is just another element of how terrifying he really was, but it adds some credibility. I mean, his actions add credibility to anybody who, you know, is crazy or doing it for attention or really needs psychological help or was brainwashed by a psychologist. It adds some believability to their stories, you know, that this man went around and did this, he claims, 20,000 times in the name of the devil. I don't know. Do you guys agree with me or?
No, I do. And I think it sets shit back, like dickheads like him, like that do things like this and claim that, oh, the devil made me do it, or the devil spoke to me, or, you know, I did it in the name of the devil, but now I'm reformed.
And then, just like that, Josh found Jesus. Or more along the lines of Jesus appeared to him as a bright light, talked to him as a child, and basically told him he would die unless he repented for his sins, which is kind of interesting, because, you know, for all those years, Satan appeared to him, you know, told him to, you know, kill and eat and sacrifice all these multiple children. Jesus just decides around 96 just to, you know, kind of hop in and tell him you probably shouldn't be doing that. So, you know, around that time, you know, Josh kind of disappeared for a while, you know, comes back, you know, a while later, and, you know, becomes a Christian minister of all things. One of the quotes that he had said, you know, and he during his preaching, he'll come across, you know, his victim's relatives and say he feels so bad, but he actually says, you know, it's his satanic powers possessing him that caused him to do this, and he shouldn't be held responsible for his crimes. So, you know, again, a complete 180. He is the president of the End Time Train Evangelistic Ministries, headquartered in Liberia. He married a pastor and actually has four children. Sometime around, I would say, like the early 2000s, I guess they're trying to hold people accountable. So they founded the Liberian government founded the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Josh, being the brave person to be, you know, hold himself accountable for his wartime actions, actually fled to Ghana for a while. And it's, you know, in kind of a little bit of irony, a lot of the people that he had helped during that time had fled and gone back to the streets and gone back to drugs. So, you know, it's clear to see how, you know, Jesus coming into their lives really, you know, permanently set them on the right path, sarcasm intended. So, you know, a lot of this was documented on film, you know, and, you know, I mean, he is sticking to it. I mean, he's, you know, seeing him on film, he's a very convincing minister. He doesn't really take so much accountability for his actions and, you know, saying I did wrong, but basically says I did these things. He very proudly claims what he does. He has literally no shame in the horrible things that he had done, and very gleefully exclaims that, you know, it was Jesus Christ that saved him and you must embrace Jesus Christ. And, you know, even to this day, despite everything that happened, I know we're kind of talking about this a lot in the beginning, like, you know, surprisingly, no one has killed this motherfucker, and he's still out there. He's still out there preaching. He's still out there. You know, he apparently in 2016, he wanted to try to raise like $500,000 for, you know, his, you know, to try to train child soldiers and drug addicts in construction and farming and whatnot. So, I mean, that's kind of the surprise ending to this story, was just the fact that he claims that, you know, Jesus Christ came to him and Jesus Christ told him to repent. And like that, you know, he flips the script and, you know, instead of following Satan, he follows Jesus. And, you know, and once the Truth and Reconciliation Commission came around, Josh had actually willingly testified, and there was an audible gasp in the hearing room when he had confessed to being responsible for the deaths of over 20,000 people. And when the Truth and Reconciliation Commission actually gave their recommendation, and it was either prosecute or don't prosecute. It wasn't actually like a trial or anything. It was just hearings. And Blahi was not on the name of list for prosecutions. He was listed under the amnesty list. So unless there's some other future attempt at prosecuting him, he essentially got away with the war crimes that he did. I mean, you could say that legally he got away with it. I mean, he's under, you know, he's received death threats. You know, he had to flee to Ghana for a while. As his children get older and they hear what their father did, who knows? I mean, I would like to think that it's some way that he will be haunted for the rest of his life. But honestly, when you see the charisma and the narcissism of him on tape, I find it rather hard to believe that, you know, he feels as guilty and will ever suffer any type of punishment or, you know, or any guilt or anything that he actually deserves.
No, I was going to say, I really don't think he feels one ounce of remorse for any of that. I mean, if you kill one or two people and then I understand, you know, you feel bad. 20,000 fucking people? No, you have no ounce of remorse after that shit. He's probably sitting there still laughing about it.
I mean, he has grown men calling him daddy.
Yeah.
I got grown men calling me daddy. That's nothing.
I mean, you know what I mean? Like, he has grown men in a religious standpoint. Many, like I'm talking like buses full, like blessing him in Jesus's name and thank you, daddy, they'll shout.
And this is the thing with this cult of personality. They literally looked at him as like a savior. I mean, these people followed him to death and they followed him to Jesus. You have to admit, this guy's got a hell of a lot of charisma.
Yeah, I was going to like touch on that too. I mean, it's just like, because you're sitting there, you see the story written out on paper, like without any kind of emotion or any, you know, anything more behind it. And you're like, this is just too absurd. Of course, you know, you know, he's doing it now to scam people. But if you watch footage of him, he's got it. I mean, even me watching that video, I'm like, he might actually be remorseful. He might, and it's because of presentation. But you're right, if you have a little bit more of a brain than that and you really watch it and then you watch it again and you really kind of zero in on what he's doing, it's boasting about killing these people. So I think you made a really good point there, just for anybody who, you know, is watching it and is really on the fence between, you know what, this guy is really trying to make up for all the damage that he did and all the children that he, you know, viciously ripped out of this world. If you believe his intention for one second, I would just say, watch it again, watch the way he brags, like listen to him. And he's like anybody else. You know, we could name off how many very charismatic, very intelligent, very aware minister characters, cult leaders, anything you want to call them. I mean, they're across all walks of life, but he's really no different. He just participated in actual satanic ritual abuse and got away with it. Because the community stuff, you can bring that up, you know, well, he's training ex-child soldiers in trades and he's doing this, he's doing that. There are, just to be fair, there's a lot of, it seems like these ex-cannibal warlords are doing that. I think General Bin Laden, he was another one, but he's one of them. I think he started carpentry, or at least claims to have started carpentry with kids in the community.
Yeah, carpentry and masonry and projects. Yeah.
There's no proof that they're doing this and that it's actually having a positive benefit on the community. It looks, anytime these men are filmed, like they have a pack of, like they have a gang around them, frankly, that is designed to be their bodily protection. In General Buttnaked's case, or Josh's case, he has entire ministries behind him because they have bought into what he's selling now, which is being a reformed evangelical. So he's protected on all fronts. I think a lot of these generals, just to keep themselves safe from any kind of like long-term final like prosecution or justice, they do operate like this too. It's on this front of like, well, I'm doing all of these things in my community now. I don't really see the proof. It just seems to me like something else, they like a wall that they want to build as protection. And that's definitely what Josh has done with Jesus. I would argue that it's all he's done.
And it would be interesting, you know, not only for his followers, but also for, you know, all, everyone else who has heard the story, the study hall, listeners, if we could actually see him, I mean, as horrible as it would be, if we actually could see him committing these atrocities, and then asking yourself, like, can you reconcile that person you see killing and murdering like multiple children versus the person you stand there with the charisma admitting to what he did? Like, can you actually, like, if you could actually look back, could you, you know, could anyone truly, like, kind of like the suspension of disbelief, could you actually like put away the fact of like, okay, the person I see now, if you actually did see him doing these things, like if you actually saw him, you know, going in and murdering and eating people, like, you know, would you still be able to see him as a redeemable person? What do you all think?
This is a really interesting question. I kind of learned where I stood with this a little bit earlier in life. I keep bringing up things that you can't exactly equate to Josh and Josh's history. But if you've ever read The Green Mile or seen The Green Mile by Stephen King, there's this character, his name is Dale. And spoiler alert, he's one of the more sympathetic prisoners in the prison, and he befriends this little mouse, and it's very cute, and he's very endearing, and he's written in a very endearing way by King. And then in the film, I forget exactly the actor who plays him, but he's portrayed as this very innocent, you feel pity for him. You want to give him a hug. He's designed to do that. And there are people like that. In his case, you know, he's somebody who elicits a lot of sympathy. Josh is somebody who elicits a lot of, frankly, I don't know what it is. It's definitely a kind of attraction. I don't have a name for it right now, but he is attractive. Like in the way he speaks, in what he says, he tells a good story. And he tells it in a way that gets you to feel at least some kind of affection for him. And the character of Dale was the same way. I remember being a kid watching The Green Mile and thinking, like, I really feel bad for this guy. I wish they would just let him out of jail. You know, I wish they would maybe not execute him, because clearly he's trying to see the error of his ways and he's a good person and he's got this little mouse friend. And, you know, it really makes me sad that they're going to execute this prisoner, even though he's on death row, Dad. It really makes me sad. If you read the book, And this is something that I don't give my dad a lot of credit in life for anything, but he pointed it out to me, that this, the reason that he's on death row is for, you know, essentially targeting women, raping them brutally, like brutally in alleys, and then leaving their bodies there for their families to come home and find outside of the apartments or the townhomes where they live. Just, and that, you know, it took a while for that to click with me, but just because, in my opinion, you're doing everything to right a wrong and maybe eliciting sympathy just because of, you know, the aura that is attached to your person or what you're doing for a mouse or surviving kids in your community, it doesn't change the fact that, you know, a girl was brutally raped against her will and left in an alley for her family to find. It doesn't change it. So in my opinion, I don't really agree. I believe that there are levels of reconciliation, if that's the kind of Christian word you want to attach to it. But no, for something like that, no. I don't think there's any redeemability. I don't think that anything left you do in life is going to make up for it, or even it definitely shouldn't act as a shield for you either. So anybody else?
No, I completely agree. And I think that was a great comparison. from my standpoint, this will be kind of quick and painless. I think you have to look at it and consider different lenses. The lens that I look at it through, hard no. Like there's no line, there's no reconciliation, like get the fuck off this planet, type of shit. Like, but I mean that's just my lens from research and bias and programming. Like, but then you have to look at it from the lens of, you know, a Liberian who lives in fucking, you know, who lives there and who's experienced this and who in some way, shape or form may experience, like, you know, the benefits or the quote unquote, like, repair efforts that, you know, butt naked's trying to do in some of these communities. And in their world, it's making a physical impact and change. And it's making a difference, like an immediate difference in their personal lives. So when it comes to the villagers and how much support he garnishes when he goes through, that's where I kind of go with that. It makes a little bit more sense. So through that lens, I can completely understand consideration for, you know, embracing him and his path to redemption. I can't reconcile with that in any way, shape or form personally, but I think that's maybe why he's having such success, is one, word of mouth, the stories that are told from village to village, as, you know, all these influential members and formal generals pass through communities and tell stories and recollect about the Civil War, because that's still happening. Like, you know, the people are still alive. These generals and these fucking war criminals are still roaming these communities, and they have claims to fame and they have status. But no, like I said, as far as, it's a great question. I really don't think, you know, there's any type of, you know, doubt in my mind that, just like I said before, he needs to be ejected off of the planet.
And I do want to kind of add something too on top of that, like another question. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, right, that he is making such a big difference and these cannibal generals are making a really big difference on their redemption path, and they are physically and just day-to-day life affecting those who have survived their atrocities. Let's say they're affecting them now in good ways. The fact that, in specifically in Josh's case, that he is, it doesn't matter that it's Christianity, but that it's under the guise of any religion, like, okay, now I can use this evangelical creed, basically I can use tones of theocracy to bring people together. It's not just with the message, you know, let's come together because we need to do the right thing, we need to build up communities, we need to do this. It's now specifically for a god again. I definitely, as a Satanist, I don't know if I would even be comfortable, like, let's flip it around and say he's a reborn Satanist or something, but he's definitely very peaceful and he's doing all of these community efforts with Satanism attached to it. I still don't really know that I'd be that comfortable, just because I think historically, and we are, you know, skeptical thinkers. That's definitely part of being Satanist, a Satanist, at least that's what I consider. I don't think that ends well for any community if you base it solely off of, well, a God is in our lives now and we're doing this for God because God appeared or God said it was right. Or I don't know if that's necessarily the foundation that people should rebuild on. Of course it's up to every community and every individual, whether or not they want to do that. But I don't necessarily know if I can, you know, stick my thumb up and be like, good job, everybody. Good
job. No, hope makes you latch on to some crazy fucking shit.
Do you know what the worst part about him converting to Christianity is? In my opinion, it's the fact that, like, and this is one of the things that pisses me off about Christianity as a whole, it's that Christians have to forgive him and Christians have to accept him because he, quote unquote, accepted Jesus Christ as his personal savior and, you know, begged God's forgiveness, you know. Almost like in Christianity, nothing he's done wrong has really kind of mattered because he was forgiven by God. He had begged God's forgiveness and is now doing God's work. You follow what I'm saying? Isn't that kind of fucked up?
You're absolutely right. And that's, yeah, like going back to what I was trying to say earlier, but you definitely did just put it in a very, you put it in a way better way. The Christianity aspect of it completely alleviates the need for justice. And me as a Satanist, I don't believe in that. You know, I don't believe that, first of all, I believe that redemption is very dependent on the situation, but also I don't believe in any stupid invisible higher power that erases what you have objectively done to somebody else. Where Christianity, it's founded on that. I do attach, you know, that to Satanism, just the fact that he really shouldn't be forgiven or redeemed. And just because somebody with a theocratic creed says, yeah, the invisible sky dad that we believe in say that, you know, you can have your entire past and history erased at a snap, you know, like that's not, it's not something I believe that real physical tangible people who have done tangible things should be beholden to. And he is, and he's getting away with it because they back him. They believe in this so strongly and they believe that their creed can completely alleviate justice that absolutely that right. he's going to continue. He's probably going to do this until he dies.
And he will.
But it all goes back to, you know, it's like,
and watch him have the most peaceful death ever.
Yeah, no, watch him respond to our email like after this episode airs. That's what's probably we're gonna be like, hello, how you guys doing? I'm like, I'll do an episode. Like, fuck. We already did it.
Hey, I'm down for part two. And I ain't giving him a part two. I'd be afraid for Josh after.
That's like talking about the Order of the Nine Angles for more than 20 minutes. You're just breathing life into him.
Let's do like three parter on them.
Yeah,
a zero parter.
Now we can talk about him. Shit, like I'm all for that. But like, I think if you give him too much breath, it's.
I was trying to find their website and can't find shit on them.
Social media, man, they're everywhere.
The thoughts as they, you know, as they occur to me, but you know, satanic thoughts too. Christians really, really like this. I mean, I've seen quite a few of really gung-ho, specifically Christian people. They really get off when somebody admits to being a former Satanist who
partakes
in satanic ideology and does horrible things and then comes to God. I mean, it's a really powerful recruitment tool for them. They look like they kind of sexually get off on it.
Well, those recruitment tools equal tithes, like equal donations, equal fatter envelopes on Sunday morning.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Cocksuckers. So
another aspect of the story.
Hey, don't don't compare them to cocksuckers. Cocksuckers deserve more respect than that.
You're absolutely right. It's just, you know, that's just one of those things I say. I say cunt too.
I love that.
Cunt pisses a lot of people off. Yeah, I use cunt all the time. I'm not even fucking British. I like to call people cunts. I don't refer to a vagina as a cunt. No, I'm not that fucking guy. I don't do like redneck shit. But but no, just straight up, stop being a cunt. Like, I'll say that.
All right. So, any parting words about our non-friend Josh over there?
I think we did it justice.
Did you?
I think we did it enough justice. I think, you know, it's a fucked up topic and a fucked up story. I don't know. Wrapping it up is hard because he's still getting away with this shit, and that angers me.
It's fun. It's easy to laugh at this because it's so comical, but you know, let us not forget, you know, all the victims, all the people who, you know, will wake up screaming every night with a picture of General Butt Naked burned into their mind and their psyche forever. I mean, that's kind of my parting words. I mean, you know, it's comical saying, yeah, they ran into battle, you know, naked and wearing dresses and stuff. But I mean, you know, these are literally people's children that were, you know, killed and eaten. And, you know, the amount of trauma that he inflicted on an entire generation of Liberians cannot be understated. So, you know, those are the people we should be focused on, is, you know, his victims and their survivors and their families. So sorry for getting a little deep to wrap it up there, but just want to say, you know, that at the end of the day, those are the people that really matter, not this piece of shit. Mic drop, I'm out.
I want to actually bounce off what you were saying, Al, about, you know, like the whole, you know, being more on the victim side. You know, we have a modern day, we're talking about a modern day Albert Fish here, a child killing cannibal. The only difference between the two would be the people or the children that Albert Fish killed didn't know it was happening. Think about the group of fucking children that are sitting here going, oh, am I next? Like, what's going to happen? Like, they're living there in fear. At least these, I mean, granted, I mean, I'm sure, you know, the children, once they saw everything that happened, you know, go through with Albert Fish, you know, terrified. I mean, popping out of the closet butt naked so he didn't get blood on his clothes and things of that sort, you know, whipping the children, things of that. But I couldn't imagine being a part of an army, this butt naked army, but knowing I could be chosen as that sacrifice any fucking day. Like, that's fucking terrifying. Like, to live in that, like, I couldn't imagine how it felt. It just blows my fucking mind.
I mean, there's also a devaluation of human life. I mean, you go in figuring I could die at any day. I could die tomorrow, or, you know, I mean, plus with all the drugs that were pumped up on. I mean, yeah, I mean, you've got a completely valid point, but in the fog of war and everything, who knows how messed up these child soldiers' minds were?
Oh yeah.
I mean, there were thousands and thousands and thousands of victims. When it comes to everybody that, you know, not only General Butt Naked was responsible for, you know, for slaughtering, but everybody else in this conflict. It was an absolute disaster, and it was a failure on all types of levels. It was a failure on aid levels. It was a failure on awareness levels. It was, you know, not publicized like it should have been, but then you got to understand the times. Like, we weren't dealing with the media of today. but I think the whole focus on, you know, the victims is a great way to end it. And, you know, we did have some laughs, but like we say, the focus needs to be put on, you know, making sure that, you know, education continues and people become more aware of this stuff and, you know, where people fall victim to this less and less and less throughout the world. And, you know, this definitely, you know, you said it earlier, Veronica, I think, you know, he's a sociopath, and these behaviors are exhibited by, you know, many people inside our community, outside our community. These are things that you have to be very mindful of, but this is real world shit. And again, this happened in my lifetime. You know what I mean? Like, yes, it happened in Liberia, but this was nuts. Like, a man literally claims 20,000 or more lives amongst his army of children called the Butt Naked Brigade. And he's still telling the story like some badass, heroic, redeemed celebrity worshipped figure. And that, like I said earlier, it angers me. But I'm glad we did this. But there's definitely...
I did want to end on one thing. I do want to put this in another kind of perspective, specifically for Satanists. In the 90s, three boys that we've talked extensively about were put on trial and then convicted and then sentenced to jail for almost two decades, all over an arbitrary fake story where there was nothing behind it. No confessions, a coerced confession, but no tangible evidence behind it. A very in the shadows, created and manufactured in the shadows kind of story. At the same time, this warlord was butchering children and eating them in front of the entire world. It might not have been accurately documented, but a lot of things going on over there, it's censored now, but it was in broad daylight. It was on camera. And this guy has not been prosecuted yet. How many people how many modern day cases of satanic panic have gone on over here? So I think it's just maybe lends something to the message of, I think with the resources where certain communities have it, a lot better investigation can get done so that innocent life and well-being is preserved and justice is accurately carried out. Because while innocent people were going through the courts over here, Josh was doing that over there and got away with it and will continue to get away with it probably until his natural death. So.
You think he's done any since in hiding?
Yes.
I wouldn't doubt it.
Yes.
Exactly. Like,
absolutely.
That's what I'm saying. He does not have any remorse. Like,
listen, and where's he getting his money? I know there's people that are funding his journey and religious this and religious that, and there's money that's coming in from that angle. But no, like, he's still using force to get what he wants, like in one way or another. And I'm sure he's still killing people.
I'm sure he is. He's probably doing child trafficking as well. It's a lucrative fucking job right there.
All I can say is, as a Satanist, I don't believe in hell, but at times like this, I really hope there is.
Yeah, but I think that wraps it up. Thank you all for the time that you put into research in general, Butt Naked. I think we kind of summed it up pretty well. Is, you know, I haven't said this in a couple episodes, but fuck that guy. And we'll go from there. So I guess at this point, it's time to dive in to talk about social media and some good fucking things that are cooking in Philadelphia. Well, that kind of rhymes. Some good fucking things that are cooking in Philadelphia. It's like some Dr. Seuss shit, Dennis. You were on that the other day, the rhyming shit. I guess we'll talk about, let's start right off with Discord. My favorite playground as of late. It's grown on me. I fucking hated it in the beginning. It was new. I had to learn it. I didn't really want to. I thought it was for fucking gamers, and I don't know. But I don't Facebook no more. And Discord and the Goat Farm community has really kind of, kept the focus and been really super supportive in times where we all get stuck in our heads. So Discord, the link can be given by any of our esteemed hosts here. If you hit us up on any facets of social media, even email us at satanicstudyhall@gmail.com. We'll shoot you the link. You can message us on Facebook. We also still have our Facebook Goat Farm community. I am not there. I miss you all. Please come to Discord and interact with me. My friends here are, though. I did take the leap. I didn't get rid of Facebook. No, I didn't deactivate it. I deactivated it. I didn't delete it. But yeah, just search Satanic Study Hall on Facebook. Same goes with Instagram. You can also follow Belial the Baphomet. Where the fuck is Belial? There he is. Right next to me. He's quiet. Very, very fucking quiet. I don't think he likes our topic. He's not a big fan of Josh. but what else we have? We got a Twitter. Twitter is fun. Twitter is, you know, used for some fuckery and some business. You can follow us on Twitter at Satanic SH, where both the S's and the H are capitalized. And of course, we have our Patreon. That is patreon.com/Satanic Study Hall. We have three different tiers on our Patreon. The first is $3.33. Now, what does that get you? They get you a little welcome letter thanking you for your support, as well as a little 10-pack of stickers, various stickers. I think we even still have some Johnny Voorhees Backyard Wrestling Club stickers left, so we'll throw some of them in there. And then you'll get access to all of our bonus episodes and just all the posts that we put on our Patreon page. And then at the $6.66 level, you get a Satanic Study Hall composition book so you can take notes and follow along with us as we go through shit, or just do whatever the fuck you want with it. You're also going to get Satanic Study Hall pencils. I believe you're going to get a 2-pack of pencils, a whole bunch of stickers, and you will also get the other 10-pack that's included in the $3.33 tier. And then there's a $20 super fucking satanic VIP level that gets you a Satanic Study Hall t-shirt. Everything that we mentioned in all the previous packages, you get a one-on-one Zoom call or Discord meeting or whatever, or basically we just get a meet up with us. It's like a meet and greet. All right, so we'll try to schedule our little one-on-ones with the VIPs that we have within the next couple of weeks, you know, see if we can stretch them out into, you know, April, May if necessary, so we can get them taken care of. I think that hit all social media, and we are getting to the very end of things. I think this is going to be, we were like, oh, let's try to go for like an hour this time, and it's going to be like almost 2 hours. fuck it. It's your fault, Josh. But no,
fuck Josh.
Fuck the righteous. But yeah, so as far as shout outs, I want to shout y'all out for hanging out with me, and Al specifically for doing this general butt naked thing. This was fun. It was different. It's good not to be on a Zoom meeting asking somebody questions. As fun as that can be, it's nice to take a break from that and just get back to us shooting the shit and talking about things. I just also want to shout out Misty's Coventry real quick. Misty'sCoventry.com. You can also check out what they've got to offer on eBay or social media. Should have examples and how to order their awesome stuff. Rhett over at Dark Art Depository. He is always cranking shit out. He's participated in logo designs in our Discord. Rhett, keep doing your thing. You're the fucking man. We love what you're doing with, everything that's going on with Discord and all the contests that are going on. Thank you for being here. Same thing with you, Sean. Sean, I read your little introduction message. Thank you for putting yourself out there. We appreciate you being here as well. Who else do I want to shout out? I want to shout out myself, Hill Thyself. I'm fucking excited. I'm excited to be back in class, and we got some good shit coming. And I'm not going to talk about that. You'll find out about it on social media. Who's up?
I'll take the part here. Before I get started, I want to say, Bill, that was some straight ODB shit. If you ever heard the song, I Can't Wait, he literally shouts out himself in the fucking song.
Oh, yeah, I want to shout out myself. It's like, yeah. I think you did it on an award ceremony too.
Oh, really? Yeah. Nice. Yeah, no, I definitely want to shout out everybody that listens. You know, everybody who's been reaching out in the Discord. I love all you motherfuckers. You guys keep my day fucking happy and going. So keep it coming. Especially, you know, the few that are really running the literature with Lucifer contest that's going on, or you know, competition or whatever you want to call it. We're having a lot of fun with that. Bex is killing it, taking the lead on everything. I've kind of taken a back seat and just, you know, helped her out when I need to. But other than that, like, yeah, the whole Discord community, the whole community that we have, it's amazing. It's wonderful. I love the messages I get from everybody and talking. That's really all I've got to say.
Just want to, I guess, shout out you guys and shout out our little, you know, Discord and still somewhat maybe Facebook community. I know I've been a little bit kind of in the background, and might be that way for the foreseeable future, just because, you know, sometimes real world adult life requires a lot of your attention. And so I really can't thank you guys enough for holding it together while I'm a little bit, you know, on the sidelines right now. Thank you, Al, for doing all of this research. Thank you for putting him back on my radar. Josh was somebody that, you know, I had heard about in passing, like even, you know, in the last couple of years, and really did kind of fall off my radar until Al brought him up and we started talking about it again in more of a satanic light. Yeah, so the discussion was great, and really enjoyed it. Thank you, guys.
Father Al.
First of all, I want to shout out all my normie Satanists out there. Stay true to yourselves. Big shout out to all of my fellow hosts tonight, as well as the one only Johnny Voorhees. I want to thank everyone for all the research they did on General Butt Naked and his history as well. I learned some things tonight that I didn't even know about. So shout out to all of you for all of your hard work as well. We'll do something you know, a little different. I want to shout out to anyone who's been traumatized in their lives by friends, family, anyone who's had influence over them. I say that not only in the light of General Butt Naked and everyone who's been traumatized by him and his actions, but yeah, I had a lot of that going on in my own personal life over the years, and just say, you know, stay strong. If you need help, get help, and don't listen to all the negative shit that people have said about you, to you, to your face, behind your back. You're stronger than that. Believe in yourself. And if you feel like you're in pain, reach out, because there are people out there that care about you.
All right. So yeah, that's pretty much it. We do have to check in with Belial. Belial, any final thoughts on General Butt Naked? I don't know. What did he say? Johnny, I sometimes I can't understand him when he's drinking.
What he said was, "Here's you guys."
Belial misses Johnny. All right, everybody, that's going to wrap everything up for this episode of Satanic Study Hall. It's been fucking awesome. Whether you want to say Hail Satan or Ave Satanas, you're still a fuck. We love you, but thanks for being here. You're still a fuck.
Class is dismissed.